Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
As a listener to this podcast, how would you like a free case of craft beer? Head over to www.beer52.com/HuffPost to pick up yours.
On Commons People this week, Theresa May vows to quit to save Brexit.
And none of this has been about who is the Prime Minister or who is the leader of the Conservative Party.
But her deal is still in serious trouble.
And so to be consistent, I've always been against it. I'm still against it. I told my whip the other day I wouldn't vote for it if they put a shotgun in my mouth.
And MPs can't even decide on an alternative plan.
The House has today considered a wide variety of options as a way forward. And it demonstrates that there are no easy options here. There is no simple way forward.
Hello and welcome to Commons People. I'm Arj Singh, and joining me during another wild week in Westminster is Paul Wall.
Hi Arj.
Hi Paul, how are you doing?
Fine.
Also, good. I'm quite tired to be honest. also with us is Tory former Cabinet Minister Nicky Morgan.
Hello.
Hi Nicky. And also with us is Maddie Timont-Jack, who's a Brexit expert at the Institute for Government.
Hello.
Hi Maddie, how's it going?
Good. Also quite tired.
Yeah. We're hanging in there. So, Nicky, we're in your office.
You are. Yes, welcome.
Yeah. Let's crack on.
Nice map of Loughborough behind you.
Yeah, I couldn't see anything on the walls to comment on, there we go. Yeah, look at that.
I struggle, though, to get any pictures of women from the Parliamentary Art Collection. Oh. We may need to do better on that future collection.
Yeah, there aren't many women in the Parliamentary Art Collection.
No, I know.
I wrote a story on this years ago, actually. Yeah. Anyway. Already going on a tangent. So another incredible night in Parliament last night. Theresa May finally bowed to pressure to quit as Prime Minister once Brexit is through in an effort to get Tories to back her Brexit deal. Let's hear DUP leader Arlene Foster blowing up that plan within hours.
Well, of course, we wanted to try and get a deal. And when this all began, as you remember, with the Brady Amendment, we were looking to deal with the backstop. We wanted the withdrawal agreement reopened to deal with that backstop. Then there was a conversation around treaty level changes to try and deal with the issues as well. But we feel very fundamentally that the backstop in that withdrawal agreement makes it impossible for us to sign up to the withdrawal agreement. And you know what? I regret that because we wanted to get a deal that worked for the whole of the United Kingdom.
Paul, you were outside the 1922 committee meeting where Theresa May made her announcement last night. What do you make of her move?
Well, I was outside the room. Nicky, you were inside it, I think.
No, I was in the chamber because, of course, typically I was chosen to be spoken or to call to speak at 5 o'clock. So it was quite frustrating having to sit
really
there
annoying.
Knowing all the drama was going on upstairs.
So you're one of the few people who weren't in that room. Well, I was outside it, and actually it felt as though we were inside it because as soon as the events were happening, we were being texted from within it, just as we normally are with the Parliamentary Labour Party. But also, straight after the meeting, all the MPs came out and sort of unloaded what had happened on us. And it was quite interesting that there was a lot of sympathy. You know, everyone realised this was a big, big historic moment. It's easy to forget in this mad, mad week just how historic that moment was last night. A Prime Minister saying she's going, setting out a timetable for leaving, and not exactly being happy about it, obviously very, very sad about it, but feeling she had no choice. What I thought was crucial was the way that she managed quickly to flip a few people in the room. Like, you had people like Robert Courts, you had people like James Gray, but the first one was Richard Bacon, who's a diehard Brexiteer, who's voted twice against the deal and then said he would vote for it. So it looked like the strategy was working, but then within minutes, you got Steve Baker going to the ERG meeting down the corridor, just a few doors down, and doing this extraordinary, Spartan speech. But worse than all of that for the Prime Minister, I thought, was it must have been that moment when she got a phone call from Arlene Foster, before Arlene Foster just went on Sky News Live and said, "I'm sorry, it's not good enough." And that was the key moment of the evening, in my opinion. And it will remain the key moment, won't it, until the DUP do change their minds.
Nikki, do you think it's strange that the Prime Minister announced a timeline when she didn't know she'd have the numbers to get the deal through?
I think in a way she was probably left with no choice, in the sense of, you know, it was a big party meeting, and the people that she did, as Paul says, you know, Conservative MPs, she does need to change their minds. She was going to have to say something to them. But yes, it seems strange that it was quite as firm as it was, given that she apparently, well, didn't know what the DUP was going to say. Now, had there been inklings? Who knows what conversations there had been going on, whether, you know, events had been sort of set in train so that she couldn't then perhaps be a bit more vague in what she was saying to the 22, although she had a sense that might not be enough for the DUP. And I think the other thing is, the DUP, they're not Conservative MPs. Now, for them, in a way, their arrangement is with the Conservative Party. Who the leader is of that party is sort of irrelevant, and I think perhaps become less so. They feel their relationship is with the party. And so I'm not surprised that changing the leader of the Conservative Party is less relevant to them and their votes, but obviously it does have huge relevance to Conservative MPs. So, you know, and we obviously wait to see then whether... I mean, I think discussions are continuing with the DUP. What on earth are going to yield?
It's interesting, though, you say that, Nikki, because actually, if there is a leadership... Well, now that we know when there is a leadership contest, the DUP won't explicitly say, look, we back X or Y. Yeah. Of course they won't. They won't want to be seen to interfere. But we're bound to get sort of mood music from them about saying, actually, well, these are our demands, and who's going to meet those demands? Mm. And I think that will shape the nature of the race, won't it? Because if there isn't a general election, you still need them.
Absolutely. No, they're still very much needed. Yes, it could well have an influence. I think the bigger impact is going to be, actually, do we have some candidates who have got a vision for what they want to do for the party, the country, all the domestic politics that has completely stalled and everything else. Undoubtedly, the conversations with leading DUP members in Westminster and in Northern Ireland, influential up to a point, but not the critical factor.
And that sounded to me like you might even think about it yourself.
Well, no, it's very nice that people are thinking of me. I've got to say, I have no desire and no intention of standing.
Oh, say that.
I mean, look, I think, you know, I mean, generally, I'm interested in leadership per se. Obviously, being education secretary, spent a lot of time thinking about leadership shown by head teachers and others. I think we are in desperate need in this country of really talented national leadership from both main parties. But, you know, I'm not going to worry about the Labour Party. They can have to take care of themselves. But we so need somebody who is going to, heal some divisions, try to take things forward. There are so many areas of domestic policy that now just are not getting the attention. I was talking to a minister this morning who was just saying, he said, nothing is happening in government at the moment. And that's frustrating for ministers. It's deeply frustrating for civil servants, I'm sure. And I think the country, I mean, they're sick to death of all of us anyway. And they know that their particular interest areas are not being dealt with.
Yeah.
Let's talk in more detail about leadership later. But Maddie, can Theresa May get this deal through if the DUP doesn't back it?
Oh, I mean, that's the question that everyone's asking. Well, I think at the moment the numbers are just... It's very difficult to see how the numbers stack up. And, I mean, again, Nikki might have a better idea of what her colleagues and her party are thinking, but, you know, she's sort of... The last time we had a vote, 75 Conservative MPs opposed it. She's got... You know, there does seem to be this hardcore group of ERG who are refusing to back it. I think there's some talk about whether you can whittle that down to 16 Conservative MPs who oppose it. But in that situation, if the DUP are also opposing it, then you are going to need Labour MPs to get that through, because the Conservatives with the DUP have a majority of 8. So, you know, they will need to have Labour votes. And, I mean, there's been some discussion about whether any more Labour MPs will back it, but I think the challenge for Labour MPs is they're not going to back or vote in favour of the government's deal in a position where they don't know that it will definitely get over the line. And also, you know, we will need to bring forward this domestic legislation to implement it, the withdrawal agreement bill. There are likely to be a number of votes on that. So there is a big question of, will the Labour MPs who might vote for the deal once, will they be willing to walk through the lobbies with the government time and time again as that bill gets through? And I think that's what they'll all be thinking about at the moment. So, I mean, really, I just think it's too close to call.
And especially given that Labour MPs now know if they vote for this deal, they get another Tory leader who may well be somebody that is even more Brexit-y than the current Tory leader. Definitely. You know, that's a big problem for a lot of Labour MPs.
But I think Maddie's point is really interesting, because that was the calculation that Theresa May had to make after the first meaningful vote went down. Was she going to still carry on thinking the coalition could get her through and would enable her to carry on governing afterwards? And that was a big factor, I think, in cabinet ministers' minds. Had to be Conservative MPs plus the DUP, most Conservative MPs. Or did she pivot to a more a Brexit that could appeal across the House? But knowing that actually relying on Labour MPs to keep walking through the voting lobby, I mean, it's going to be hard enough for a Labour MP to do it once. And you're right, they'll use their political capital at the moment when they can say to their local party, particularly if they're in a Leave voting area, I did this because the constituency voted for Brexit, but, you know, that's as far as I'm going. Or would they keep on going? And I think that was the factor. The other group of people, so we haven't, they're much smaller, are the pro sort of Remain Conservative MPs, who have also voted now twice against the agreement. And I think there's a lot of conversation going on with them now. I'm not sure that any are necessarily can be brought back. But again, you know, as Conservative MPs, if people like the Richard Bacons of this world are prepared to back it, it's certainly worth, you know, checking and discussing with them. The pro-Remain, people like Justine Greening or Sam Gyimah or Gita Ebeb, whether in fact they would now, at this last moment, back the agreement.
Just the last one, this, you mentioned the prospect of a hard Brexiteer taking the Tory leadership. Nikki, what did you make of Boris Johnson flipping on the deal straight away as soon as he got a sniff of a leadership contest?
Was I surprised? No. Look, I mean, I think that the honest truth, I think, is that at this hour of most national need, any MP, any Conservative MP who doesn't vote for the Prime Minister's draft agreement, I think they will find it very difficult to get traction in the Conservative Party for their leadership bid. Looking at what Conservative MPs are now saying amongst themselves, looking at people like, I don't want to keep going about him, but Richard Baker, but Michael Fabricant, James Gray, other people who have been very clear they don't like the agreement, if they can vote for it, they will be saying, well, hang on, when we were asked by the Prime Minister, and she is still the Prime Minister, she's still our party leader, we were asked to support. If you, ex-leadership candidate, could not do it, then, you know, sort of where are your priorities for the country? So I think at the moment there's only one, I mean, you know, so far I just think there's one leadership candidate who sort of is out there who is holding out, and that is Dominic Raab, who we do not know obviously what his position is.
And he did a doorstep this morning again suggesting that somehow PM should go back to Brussels. It wasn't like, I'm going to back your deal. There are lots more conditions. I think Nikki's absolutely right. Everyone forgets the next Tory leader is selected from MPs first and then goes to the country. That message, be it Dominic Raab or someone else, that I'm dead against, no surrender on this deal, would do really well with the members, but amongst MPs, it, as Nikki says, it might be seen as an abdication of leadership, real leadership.
Britain might be leaving Europe, but it doesn't mean our taste buds need to. This month, Beer 52 and Ferment have teamed up for the Citizens of Everywhere project to bring you 12 craft beer collaborations from breweries across the EU. There's something for everyone's taste, so head to www.beer52.com/huffpost for your free case of craft beers.
Now we're trying to find a way through how we deliver Brexit. Last night we had debates and votes on 8 alternatives to Theresa May's Brexit deal, but not a single one found a majority. It's fair to say Oliver Letwin, who's the architect of the process, didn't exactly get the best of receptions in the Commons after the vote. Let's have a listen.
The majority view. I think that would be in the interests of our constituents.
Crazy.
Maddie, was this, as Tory James Gray said, a ridiculous waste of time?
So I don't actually think it was. I mean, I think firstly, what I found from a sort of parliamentary geekery perspective, it was quite interesting to see the Commons like trying out a new way of trying to find a way through something that does not have a sort of simple yes or no answer. And I thought it was sort of quite interesting because it meant the way they did it was that MPs went and they voted on a piece of paper on the 8 options all at the same time, and they could vote for more than one option. It meant you didn't have quite the same thing of knowing how others were voting. I mean, you might have had conversations, but you don't know quite in the same way. And you also don't have to say, well, if this one's ruled out, then I'll vote for this one. It was sort of a simple way of judging the lay of the land. And I mean, yes, there wasn't a majority in favour of any of them. I do think there were a couple of options that if you start ruling out some of the ones that already got rejected might have legs going forward. So I think the sort of big question from my perspective is how we're going to organise it when we have come back on Monday. That's the sort of plan, is to have a sort of another round and actually to see whether at that stage MPs will be more willing to compromise, which so far they haven't been. But no, I wouldn't dismiss it entirely.
I mean, how should we organise it on Monday?
Yeah, so there are a couple of different ways we could do it. And I think these are both ways that you could try and get to a point where you start, again, eliminating options. So the first way to do it is you could do more of an AV style. So where MPs, whichever options end up being sort of on the ballot paper, you rank options in order from, say, 1 to 5, if 5 options are sort of selected. And then you basically transfer votes. You wipe out the one with the least sort of first votes, and then you sort of move through and you reallocate votes according to it, and sort of end up with hopefully one option standing, although there is a bit of a risk there that it ends up being a bit of a lowest common denominator and it ends up being everyone's third choice rather than anyone's first. The other way that's quite interesting is to try and vote, you sort of vote on all 5 as if you're voting, you have to pick one out of the 5, and then whichever one has the least votes you sort of rule out, and then you vote on all 4 again. And then whichever one has the least votes, you rule out. And so it's a way to try and get to a point where actually you're sort of, you hopefully get to a position where you're voting on all options against each other. And then you sort of end up with the last one standing. I think that was a proposal from NISA. NISA's proposal there. That was using sort of game theory as a way to try and get to a point where you can get something that MPs support. So those are the two options.
I think that's
options.
Quite another. A Labour MP to me said exactly the same thing this morning. They quite like that, where the least popular is knocked out. It's a bit like the Tory leadership contest. Let's be honest. If it's good enough for a Tory leader, I mean, just been talking about that, surely it's good enough for Brexit? I don't know. Yeah. But what I think was really interesting, it will be on Monday, whether or not any of this, the runoffs procedure, is set down. Because surely it has to be. The House has to approve this. It can't just... Oliver Letwin can't decree, look, I've got an AV voting system and we're going to do it. MPs are going to have to vote for it, and there may be no majority for that. And then what the hell do we do? That's why I think, in many ways, I'm really surprised that Letwin is a very smart chap, as Nikki knows. It's like he hasn't quite thought through. He always knew there wouldn't be a majority on the first round. He always knew there'd be a second day, but he hasn't had the discussion about how you get there. And now, obviously, to his credit, you might say, or in his defence, you might say there's been not a lot of time. But I talked to one of those grandees who said, look, we really need to, maybe we don't need a vote at all the second time. We just need people to sit down in a room and agree, what do we actually think there is most likely everyone will agree, will coalesce around? Now, that sounds far-fetched, doesn't it? But maybe, because it ultimately is about politics, well, not a voting system.
If you remember, back in January, and I was working with Nick and Oliver, we came up with this idea of a bill, and there was going to be a committee MPs.
Exactly.
We were going to use liaison committee, the chair's committees, to do exactly that.
That's true.
And, I think, obviously, one of the comments made yesterday's debate was, if we'd been doing some of this 2 years ago, we might be in a much happier position as a country, as a parliament, and everything else. Talking to overseas parliaments, they are staggered that we have got to, obviously, this late stage, but they are staggered we're still voting, haven't had that cross-party consensus. I thought Mary's comment was interesting about when you said you might end up at the sort of the everybody's third option. But that's where, in a way, you're going
to
end up in a negotiation.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole point is, we were never going
to
end up with somebody getting their preferred option for Brexit. And that has been one of the classic mistakes made over the last couple of years, was not admitting that... Sorry, that's the bongs. Yeah,
it really is an office.
but people not being clear about the fact it's a negotiation, it involves compromise. Nobody's going to get what they want, and some people are led to believe, also in the country, they could get the exact Brexit they wanted, and nobody else's would be good enough. And that's why I think people feel so let down.
Yeah, and it is a bit like the Oscars, the system, don't forget. That's why, you know, the Oscars has this preferential vote.
I thought, Paul.
Well, the Oscars as well. But that, the criticism of the Oscars is the reason they've had a series of bland winners recently is because it's everyone's second or third preference.
I would just add...
But, you know, that's the Oscars, not Britain.
I mean, the other thing I would just say on these options, I mean, it's really worth noting that these options are not all sort of equal. Mm. So, for example, one of the options that did very well last night was the one saying you'd have a referendum on a deal. What is that deal?
Yeah. That's exactly
and I
right.
Think,
yeah.
So it's a bit of an issue if that ends up being the last one standing, because actually we still have no idea what deal is going to get a majority. It doesn't say the Prime Minister's deal, it just says a deal.
Well, I thought the Carl Wilson thing originally was going to be this withdrawal agreement subject to a confirmatory referendum. And so I was quite surprised when I saw the drafting of that and it said any withdrawal agreement. And that's exactly, that's one of the reasons I didn't support it. I'm not keen on a second referendum anyway. But, you know, on the basis that we all might have to climb out of our, you know, as I said, yes, there are silos in our trenches. And then I got a lot of constituents emailing me saying, you know, actually a second vote and all the rest of it. I'm worried about what else is on the ballot paper, you know, Remain or No Deal or whatever it is. But I was quite surprised. And think if I were, think about what happened on Monday, if I were Peter Kyle or the sort of the other Margaret Becky or whatever, I would be thinking maybe I should just amend that wording and say this withdrawal agreement subject to confirmatory referendum.
But the reason, Nikki, that wording was changed was because the Labour front bench do not in any way want to be seen to endorse the deal rather than a deal. And I think you're right. I mean, and that's the problem, because it's not going to get over the line without that Labour support. I've heard something else today, which is that on, and we might write a story about this later, so I'm blowing out exclusive, that on Monday there will be a proposal which combines Clark and Beckett. So it's a referendum on Clark or Remain. So it's making a massive assumption that the customs union is basically the deal, or you remain. Now, a lot of people would go bananas and say that's just not Brexit, you know. But who knows? I mean, that might be where we end up.
But is it the only deal that can pass? So Theresa May's withdrawal agreement, plus a political declaration that has a customs union in it, subject to a referendum. That, to me, looks...
I mean, what's interesting is the political declaration doesn't actually rule out a customs union anyway.
Good point.
So, well, which is why my hard Brexiteers don't like it.
Well, exactly. It is very broad. And so it's quite interesting if that's the sort of thing that will end up getting everyone over the line, when actually you almost go, well, maybe we could have voted for this 2 months ago. I don't know if I want to think about that, actually. But you know, I mean, it is quite interesting, because there's nothing else really in that, in Clark's motion, to say sort of anything else that they want from it. And the political declaration is very broad.
Mm.
I suppose Labour want to bind the hands, don't they, of future governments. That's the thing.
But also, the only problem, that, in my opinion, with the customs union model, Ken Clark's, the big loser is going to be Liam Fox. But surely... Yeah. Theresa May can kind of handle that. She can handle, all right, it is a big loss from the manifesto to say we're not going to really have an independent trade policy, but you get everything else.
Well, so if you go back to the Lancaster House speech and you look at the wording there, she was very clear then about the leaving single market, but she was quite vague. And I seem to remember at the time there was a discussion about, well, we haven't actually got the position on what we're going to do about customs. And then, you know, the manifesto again, I think it does talk about leaving the customs union, but does talk about there being a customs relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't quite remember the exact wording now. So I think for Theresa May, it's always been about freedom of movement being the issue, so it can't be part of the single market in the EA. So in a way, perhaps last night, if she had a chance to reflect on the day and the votes, you know, in terms of acceptability, the customs union might be just a little more acceptable. But there's a debate going on amongst Conservative MPs about, you know, again, what do people vote for in 2016? Was it about sovereignty? Was it about immigration? Was it about lots of other things? So therefore, how acceptable is customs union? I was quite surprised that George Eustace's EEA-EFTA didn't get more support. But I'm afraid to say there were also, even at this late stage, some very basic questions about the difference between customs union and single market being asked by some people. So if you're going to have a referendum on a customs union, there's a heck of a larger debate to be had in the country. Also got to get legislation through to approve a referendum. And can you imagine? I just cannot see No Deal not getting onto that ballot paper somehow.
Really? That's interesting.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I just think that, I mean, you know,
public
I do...
Public demand for that.
Public demand for, you know, you can't have us voting between one, you know, Remain or Customs Union, which for some people, and I'm very told very specifically in my inbox, is absolutely not Brexit.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do think that there will be a huge campaign to put, you know, an effective no deal stroke hard Brexit
on the ballot. Maybe come back to Justine Greening's idea, which was poo-pooed at the time, but a three-question referendum, a three-option referendum, I should say.
Oh, God.
I mean, I know it sounds mad, but maybe that's the way through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been talked about by quite a few people, I think. But I think the big question is, do you do sort of deal versus no deal and then leave, remain?
Yeah, and then you do stages.
Or do it's like which way round you do it, or whether you do all in one. And it's sort of slightly...
Yeah.
Joe Johnson's idea was to have leave, you remain, and then if leave won, it would then be deal do... versus no deal.
Yeah,
which is one way to stage. Do it. Or as you say, do an AV style.
I mean, the other thing, of course, that some people talk about, you know, sort of, I think Stella Creasy was her, about the whole citizens' jury thing.
Yeah.
So do you end up, rather than having a confirmatory referendum per se, or you might end, I suppose, could end up, you end up having a citizens' jury type, or citizens' assemblies, you know, you'd know more about this, sort of where people around the country are selected at random from ballots to come and hammer all this out. And it has been used, I think, in other countries for other, you know, difficult issues like this.
Yeah.
That's no potential other way. The trouble is, none of this resolves the issue speedily. None of this would stop us having to participate in the dreaded European parliamentary elections. And, you know, today we've got two business groups. You know, I think Adam Marshall, the British Chamber of Commerce, giving a speech today. You know, businesses are being crushed by the uncertainty out there. And those are people's employers. They're paying people's wages. You know, they're giving, college leavers and graduates their first employment opportunities. These people are saying, you've got to resolve this.
Yeah.
Nikki, I just wanted to ask about your Brexit journey. So you backed the Let Win amendment on Monday, which paved the way for these indicative votes. A couple of months ago, you were part of the Malthouse compromise.
And I still am. You know, I tabled a Malthouse amendment sort of plan A yesterday.
Yeah. Mm. But you're also saying, I might be willing to compromise on a customs union or confirmatory referendum. Why are you backing seemingly everything?
Well, no, I'm not in favour of no deal. And I am not, I'm certainly not in favour of revocation. And I'm not really in favour of a confirmatory referendum. As I say, I think at this stage, it's quite depressing to hear that the Labour Party is still opposed to the withdrawal agreement, because actually they're not opposed to the withdrawal agreement. A, they want maximum chaos, and B, they don't want a blind Brexit, which I can understand. I think I'm in favour of anything that is a negotiated settlement that will lead us to an orderly Brexit, frankly. And I'm a bit like Oliver said in the chamber a few weeks ago. He said, I don't really care what the deal is now. I mean, I will vote for the withdrawal agreement if there's another meaningful vote. I will vote, you know, I voted for EA, I voted for customs union, I voted for Common Market 2.0. You know, I just think having an agreement, I think if we can't reach an agreement with the EU on phase one, it does not bode very well for the future relationship discussions. And so I do think that it's important that we do have, you know, an agreement. But I spoke about compromise yesterday. I mean, I think that is an art that has been, it's been forgotten, I think, in Parliament. And the Conservative Party has always been famed for its pragmatism. And some of my colleagues appear to have forgotten that too.
Yeah, I mean, the events of this week have led to many questions about where we go next. One certainty is there'll be a Tory leadership contest soon-ish. We may also be heading for a general election. Let's hear what Tory Deputy Chairman James Cleverly thinks about that.
Unfortunately, I do think it is more likely. I don't think it would solve anything. What we know to be the truth is that the country is still very split over Brexit. We know both political parties are split over Brexit. We know the polls say that the Labour and Conservative parties are pretty much neck and neck in the polls.
And just as we've been asking
Can we have an election now? And how would it work if Theresa May has set a date to stand down? Are we going to have an election?
The big problem is the Prime Minister's already said, and Number 10 were kind of hinting this timetable last night, she'll be gone by May 22nd if her deal is approved. Now, if a deal isn't approved, there's a big question about, does her commitment to go still stand? I'm not clear about that. I mean, surely the party won't wear it. I mean, you can't suddenly pull this thing, I don't think. She did try and make it conditional last night, but it's not really conditional if you're being forced into it. So I suspect whatever happens, the PM's going to leave at some point this year. If she's going to leave, she's also said another commitment, I will never lead this into another general election. And, you know, a lot of Tory MPs think that would be utter disaster and Corbyn could win. So how does that work? If there is a general election, who's going to be leader, and how much time have you got to select them? Would there be a coronation? Would there have to be a very super quick contest in the country? I mean, people have suggested before Christmas it could take 2 weeks, a really fast-track leadership contest, which might happen. So I don't know. I think the big problem for the general election is going to be just whether or not you get enough Conservative MPs who think, actually, are we going to win it? That's ultimately the only question that dictates this. And if you've got some Conservative MPs in marginal seats who are saying, actually, that's just too big a risk for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, Nikki, you're in Loughborough, famously a former Labour seat. Mm-hmm. I remember the days when that was a Labour seat.
Yeah.
And one of your USPs in government and out of government has been, look, we need to remember these people. These, you know, we can't be a party just for Tory voters. Absolutely. We've got to appeal to switchers. And that's, in my opinion, that's where the next Tory leader's got to come from, that area. And if you're going to do that, how is the general election going to help you in the short term? I'm not sure. I mean,
well, don't forget, of course, it's not as easy these days just to have a general election. You know, the Prime Minister can't just say, that's it, I'm off to the country, you know, I'm off to the palace, let's go. As we saw in 2017, there has to be, under the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, there has to be a vote. Now, I think there's it's unattractive look for MPs not to vote for an election, because you should never be frightened of democracy and speaking to your voters as a member of Parliament. I think it will be a tougher decision for people in now if it were to happen than 2017,
right,
where people dutifully troop through the lobby because they believe the 20-point lead in the polls and everything else. But don't forget, of course, the other thing is that, I mean, obviously an election can be inflicted on in a way because you have a vote of no confidence. We know that some Conservative MPs have scandalously said they might not support the government in a vote of no confidence. But there is then a 14-day period to see whether another government can command the confidence of the House. You know, we live in highly unprecedented times, and I wouldn't discount the possibility of a collection of people, I mean, I don't want to see Jeremy Corbyn anywhere near the levers of power, but it could be others who actually do stitch together. And we've seen the tectonic plates shifting with the independent group. You know, there might be something else that happens. I mean, I don't think we can rule anything out.
I think that's a really interesting idea, because you could have, under the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, I know it sounds bonkers, but you could possibly have, hear this out, you could have some Tory MPs who trigger that vote of no confidence, and then instantly trigger a leadership contest, a fast-track one, in a few days, get a new leader, and then that new leader goes to the Queen and says, I now have the DUP on side, I have a stable majority, can you make me Prime Minister? That's not beyond the wit of man, is it?
No, absolutely. I mean, it is all about winning a vote of confidence.
I agree, that definitely is an option. And I mean, the other thing that, I mean, there is a sort of question about government of national unity. Is this something that ends up having to come through and sort of manage all this sort of mess that we're in at the moment, which is also, I mean, I think probably unlikely, but again, it feels like, as Nikki's just said, we are in unprecedented times anyway, and it's quite interesting to see who might be able to come together and actually support a majority, because what you need to do at the end of that 14-day period is survive a vote of confidence in the House. Yeah. And is it actually a sort of a group of cross-party MPs who are able to do that?
I don't know. Well, particularly if you end up with a cross-party solution, or cross the House solution to Brexit. Let's just, you know, indulge in something here, which again is so unprecedented. I was going to say in fantasy, but it might not be fantasy. you know, that actually the House does come up with something next week or next days or so. Then the government, from sound reason, says, this is not our policy.
Yeah.
We don't want to implement it. So you might then say, well, actually, so who is going to implement this? Because the other thing is that there's no appetite in the country, as far as I can detect, for a general election. I'm getting many, many emails about this current situation. I am not getting any, although perhaps listening to this, I will now start to get deluged with them. They say, yes, we want to have a general election.
Have these conversations started about, you know, if a compromise gets through, who actually gets
not that
it through?
No, I mean, I think this is in the realms of kind of, you know, tea room stroke, you know, smoking room type, speculation. Mm. But look, I mean, you know, the House of Commons and the MPs love a good process conversation. We love a lot of speculation. One of the frustrating things at the moment is, you know, discussions are a kind of, you know, where could things go? And we are, indulging in things that in normal times, you know, we wouldn't be focused on.
Yeah.
It's interesting, that could be a way out. Right, well, let's move on. We've just about got time for a quiz.
Great.
And this week it's all about Tory leadership contests.
Oh, we love those.
There have been a few of them.
So
Tories are good at them, let's be fair, though.
And Labour are terrible.
I feel like I should have been reading our Institute for Government explainer on this before coming over.
Yeah,
maybe I would have been better on it.
Been reading that.
I wish I had read it. Okay, see how much I remember.
You're fired.
I know.
There's no real structure to this. Just say the
good
answer. So, first question: in the 1997 Tory leadership election, who won the first two rounds of voting among MPs?
Redwood, can I? There was, hold on, no, there was Ken Clark and Redwood are this bizarre pact where you never would have thought them ever being on the ticket, and they were both on the same ticket. I think it might have been Clark.
Correct. Clark. Yes.
Wow.
So Ken Clark was ahead.
And then, of course, William Hague came through.
In the first, second round, but picked by William Hague in the third round. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, second question. David Cameron, of course, won the 2005 leadership election, but what was his vote share in the members' ballot?
Ooh, big.
That's
how I think it was bigger than people.
65%?
I think it was around 60-something percent. He thrashed DD. I'm going to say 67.
I'll go lower then. I'm going to say like 58.
Ah, Paul wins. It was 68.
Ah.
So, and the last one, who was the first Tory leader to be chosen under a system that actually allowed MPs to vote and wasn't just the magic circle stitching up in smoke-filled rooms?
Oh, that's
the first
really
Tory
good question.
Leader
Ooh,
to be elected by the party.
Has that been Heath or Thatcher, I wonder? I'm going to go for Heath, because I don't think Heath came out of the magic circle.
I'm going to go for Margaret Thatcher, but
I have no idea.
It was Ted Heath.
Oh, well done, Paul.
I can't believe it. I've actually, for once,
in 1965, you've won the quiz.
You've won the quiz.
I think you and I
need to go back to school, clearly, Maddie.
I need to go back and read that explainer. I'm going to be let out again.
Right, well, that's all we've got time for. Thanks for joining us, guests.
Thank you.
For joining us, listeners. We're going to leave you with a speech by Tory Brexiteer Marc Francois, which descended into a bit of a mess as his colleague Ed Vasey heckled him. It was pretty late last night and pretty much sums up the week, I think.
2019.
Great. Very good.
So, he can read. Thank you, that's very kind. I'll do my best, Ed. Thanks, mate.
You're doing well.
Great. I'll carry on then.
Yeah, this is a speech.
So,